Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling. A little bit later in the show, I'll be joined by my personal friend, Robert Klemko, and the two of us will take you through a Sunday afternoon of NFL action. But first, I'm here to tell you about the Indianapolis Colts, who, absurdly enough, came into Sunday Night Football as 11.5-point underdogs against a Chiefs team that knocked them out of the playoffs last January. Of course, that was Andrew Luck's final game, and Luck's retirement is a big reason why a lot of folks wrote off the Colts in this matchup. But look, Andy Benoit and I have discussed this a couple of times on the Deep Dive podcast. The Colts thought they had a bead on Patrick Mahomes in that game last January. They fell behind early. They just weren't competitive in the first quarter of that one and just never really had a chance to get back in it. But they wanted another shot at the Chiefs, and Sunday night, you saw why. Even with safety Malik Hooker, by far their highest pedigree defensive player, sidelined, and a bunch of other guys either sidelined or playing banged up, the Colts shut down Patrick Mahomes. Now, that ankle injury that Mahomes suffered certainly helped out, as did the fact that Sammy Watkins lasted about half a play, but this was still Mahomes, the best player in the NFL, still with Travis Kelce, still with one of football's best offensive lines, and really still with plenty of weapons to use in that offense. There are definitely draft fetishists out there covering the NFL, and quite frankly, I am probably one of them. Nobody wants to build their roster full of low and undrafted players, but on Sunday, with both those starting safeties out for the Colts, they were relying on Kari Willis, a fourth-round rookie, who was, by the way, great on Travis Kelce on this night, and undrafted journeyman George Odom as their other safety, second-round corner Rock Ya-Sin, and Cleveland Browns cast-off Pierre Desir on the other side from him. Of course, Kenny Moore, the undrafted third-year player who has since emerged as football's best slot corner. He did his thing in coverage and as a slot blitzer, but the Colts didn't even have to rely on those slot blitzes as the four-man pass rush kept getting home. And look, this is not a group that had this huge investment of high draft picks or big free agent signings. You had Justin Houston getting his revenge game here. He was cast off by the Chiefs this past offseason. Kimoko Touré, who was tremendous in this game, the second-round pick from 2018, he was tremendous until he suffered that gruesome ankle injury on the final drive. We certainly hope he's okay because he continues to flash this season. They even got it out of defensive tackle Grover Stewart, who is perhaps best known as the guy announced by an orangutan at the 2017 draft. I mean, he's out there making noise. The offense gave him plenty of help, too. They controlled the ball for more than 21 minutes in the second half thanks to that dominating offensive line and the continued emergence of Marlon Mack as a bona fide star. This is how you get it done, even after your MVP-caliber quarterback walks away from your team right before the season starts. The Colts can compete with anyone because they have a program that develops players and a scheme, defensively designed by Matt Eberflus, that maximizes their talents. Of course, it'll be better when Hooker is back in the lineup, and then Clayton Gathers will be back soon too, so they'll have both their safeties. But because this program was built the right way, they'll be more than fine until then. They'll be good enough to confidently walk into a place like Arrowhead Stadium and shut down the best player in the world. All right, we have lots to talk about from Week 5. The Packers come up big in Dallas. John Gruden gets revenge? Is that what you call it? Revenge on Khalil Mack? Is that what we're going to call this? Raiders upset the Bears. It was a big deal out there in London. We have plenty to break down. Robert Klemko is joining me to do it all. Won't you please join us in just a moment? All right, we're back, and I am now joined by my personal friend, Robert Klemko. Robert, welcome to your Monday, Monday NFL podcast debut?
It's my debut. I've been avoiding this for as long as I could. I don't like any forms of media besides writing because I'm from 1940.
You're, and You're really good on the telegraphs, though.
And now I'm here, so let's do it.
All right. Well, we're starting with the headlining game of Sunday afternoon. That was Packers Cowboys, and look, no Devontae Adams for this Packers offense. They've been sort of struggling anyway, trying to find their identity. It's not really a Matt LaFleur offense at this point. It's more really looking a lot like a Mike McCarthy offense, and now they were without their top receiver. So you figure they go to Dallas, have a tough time there. It's not what happened at all, and in big part because Aaron Jones got it going, and it really was the first time you saw a really good ground game from this Packers offense.
Yeah, it was exciting, and he struggled throughout the season, and I know that intimately because he's on a couple of my fantasy teams. But this was the first Packers game I can ever remember watching where the running game set the tone and all Aaron Rodgers had to do was be good as opposed to being spectacular.
Yeah, it's kind of the theme this year, and it was like I thought it was nice. They, you know, some of these things were blocked up, and they just sort of won at the line of scrimmage. And then you saw Jones as well, just, you know, his ability to sort of bounce it out to the outside and turn it upfield. He broke containment a couple of times, and he was just giving the Cowboys fits all game.
Well, and there were a couple things going on there. I think at the first level, the Cowboys defensive line, DeMarcus Lawrence, they got dominated. He was going up against Brian Bulaga, who came into the game with a shoulder injury for a lot of it, and Bulaga looked great, and you really didn't hear from DeMarcus at all. And then once things got to the second level, Aaron was making Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith look silly on a regular basis, and those are two of the best linebackers in the NFL, and they looked pedestrian today. I mean, I think he's tremendous at breaking tacklers. He's incredible at getting to the outside, and he's smart. I mean, you remember towards the end there, he breaks it to the outside, gets around, I think it was Byron Jones, and then he does everything he can to stay in bounds and run that clock down. It was just it was smart football. It was a pleasure to watch, and I think that you don't see football teams clicking this well this early in the season, usually with a first-year head coach, a first-time head coach. So, you know, hats off to what they've been able to do in a short period of time.
I was going to say, Leighton Vander Esch had a lot of tackles 9 yards downfield in this game, was sort of the bottom line. And yeah, it's like they have everything going except for Aaron Rodgers. And Rodgers was fine in this game. He wasn't, you know, no Devontae Adams. We knew it was going to be something of a limited passing game here for the Packers. But because the defense is going. You saw it again today. And Dak Prescott sort of, you know, some fits and starts here. Had a couple of really beautiful throws. But you can tell this Packers defense is just making everyone uncomfortable that they play against. And it manifests itself like... The first interception of the game where Dak just threw behind in open Amari Cooper and turned into a tipped interception, that is sort of what's piling up here. Everyone's just sort of out of rhythm against this Packers defense right now.
Yeah, that was really the only interception that I didn't completely fault him on. I mean, yes, it's a foot behind where it needs to be. It didn't hit him in the numbers, but you're an NFL wide receiver. You're supposedly one of the top five players on the team, or you want to be paid like one. You got to catch that football. And if he does, it's a completely different game. And then maybe you don't see Dak playing as desperate as he did for 60 minutes.
It was a second straight disappointing week. I thought this week was much more encouraging, not only because they put points on the board, but it was really the turnovers that did them in here for Dallas, as opposed to last week where they just really couldn't get anything going offensively in the Saints game. But just got some stuff to iron out. It still feels like this Cowboys offense is on the verge of reverting back to what they were the first couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah, I think they're a playoff team. You know, there was no point in that game where I felt it was hopeless for them. I felt their offense. I always felt their offense was explosive enough to make it a game again. So I think Dak will clean a lot of that stuff up. I don't know that Amari Cooper's hands are going to get any better. But I know that you won't see a game like that again from Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith combined, because they just looked silly today.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the upset of the day that had Connor Orr just bawling uncontrollably. That would be out in London. John Gruden and the Raiders, their second straight year out there in London. They upset the Bears. This was another game where a Gruden team jumps out early. They were up 17-0 at halftime. And yes, the you know, we know the Bears offense has its issues, but this Raiders team, this early game script that Gruden has been putting together, they're getting out there on teams. And then it's just a matter of, can they hold on once the game wears on and sort of the talent disparity they usually have, because you do things like trade Khalil Mack, sort of stands out.
I'm confused. Is Connor a Bears fan?
Connor is a foremost John Gruden Khalil Mack trade critic. This was Connor's this was Connor's Super Bowl today, basically.
And it ended up blowing up in his face, because the one of the picks that they got for Khalil, Josh Jacobs, has an incredible game.
I know. And look, it's funny. You just laugh at it. It is funny that they that the Raiders and we all pointed and laughed at them for so long, and they won this game. Obviously, they're still better off with Khalil Mack. You'd rather have Khalil Mack than Josh Jacobs and whoever else they're going to get with these draft picks that ultimately come in. But it was just kind of neat, for the sake of the narrative, for Josh Jacobs to just have a monster game and just really look. He's been extremely impressive through the first 4 weeks of the season, but this was his best game yet. And on top of that, he scores a game-winning touchdown, capping off a 97-yard drive.
Yeah, that was it was a tremendous effort from the Raiders, and I think John Gruden deserves a lot of credit because of how rocky the beginning of this season was and how those guys have persevered. And I think you're exactly right. His script is tremendous, and even more so because they had some wide receivers out today, and they had to go too tight end a lot of the time with some heavy sets that is not necessarily going to be their offensive identity going down the road. But they make it work, and then I think the talent disparity catches up with them a lot. I don't think they're a playoff team. I don't think they're a team anybody needs to be afraid of right now, but I think that John Gruden has a bright future in Oakland.
Oh, they're hanging around right now. Obviously, they're sitting there at 3-2, which you know, outside of the Patriots and everyone's favorite Buffalo Bills in the AFC, that has you right in the thick of it. But it is going to be interesting to see what happens to this team over the next couple of years when they add a passing game weapon or two, or they really just get some guys going on the defensive line. That was, of all the discouraging things for the Bears in this game, the fact that their offensive line got pushed around by this mm-hmm. Raiders front that just is, it's not good. I mean, I'm sure they're all perfectly nice fellas and all that, but it's just not a talented line, and they absolutely controlled the line of scrimmage for the bulk of this game.
Right, and I don't think Cleveland Farrell played, did he?
I don't think he did either. I didn't see him out there.
Yeah, so it makes it even more impressive. My mom and grandma were at the game.
In London?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They did like a cruise to like Ireland and Scotland, and then they finished it with they went to the Raiders game. And they were telling me, my mom called me afterwards, and you know, she was on the bus going back to the hotel. Mm-hmm. She was saying that it was like 4-1 Bears versus...
Oh, yeah.
Raiders fans.
Oh yeah, it sounded like it on TV today, but that's really nice that Bama was out there.
Yeah, well, you know, she's been to at least one game every year that the Raiders have played in their existence.
That must have been her first London game, right?
I think it was her first London game. She might have gone the last time they played in London, but I don't remember. She usually goes to the home opener in Oakland, and then her old friends all get together and go to this bar called the Sports Page, where they haven't paid for drinks since like the early 90s.
That's pretty awesome. Nice. Bears offense still stinks. I kind of wonder if they'd be a little bit more even, I should say, with Chase Daniel as opposed to Mitchell Trubisky. But it took them a while to get going, and they really didn't get going until they got a turnover deep in Raiders territory at the beginning of the second half, and that sort of got it going. But again, this defense, kind of like they did in Denver week two, this defense, you know, they gave up the long drive to Joe Flacco that if not for the phantom roughing the passer call on Bradley Chubb, that would have cost him the game. And again, 97 yards, Derek Carr takes this offense. A couple of impressive throws on that last drive as well. And I don't know, Chicago is... I don't know about this team. This was when they were supposed to clean up here, get a little 4-1, 5-0 start. This was the soft part of the schedule before they get their week 6 bye here. And they're sitting at 3-2. They could very well be sitting at 2-3 if that Denver game is officiated properly. And I don't know. I don't know, Robert. I worry about him.
The thing that surprises me the most is that they haven't been able to consistently run the ball and get some of these backs in space, because I think David Montgomery and Tariq Cohen have a lot of potential in this offense, but as soon as they try to run stretch, you know, the tackle on the play side is getting blown off the ball back into the play. I think that's been their biggest problem, and it would take a whole bunch of pressure off of Mitchell Trubisky if they could get any semblance of a run game going, you know, when Trubisky comes back.
Yeah.
And then even when he does come back, you know, I'm not convinced that he's a long-term solution. He strikes me as one of the more inaccurate, pure throwers that's starting in the NFL right now. I mean, it's a coin toss whether or not the thing is going to be on target.
It's like I said, you thought Chase Daniel would be something of a solidifying force for the offense just because the ball goes where he tries to throw it when he throws it. He just doesn't have the physical tools. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he had a miscommunication interception to end this game, but they really didn't have anything going otherwise. They were a little bit drop prone too in this one. But
Chase did have the nice rollout touchdown where he's rolling to his right and he's got to put it in the spot. I forget who caught it, but falling down catch. That was a nice play. I mean, Chase has some moves. He's just not a consistent player.
Yeah, yeah. And we had a little Richie Incognito tribute to Vontaze Burfict with the cheap shot post play on Buster Screen. So good to see that's still going on.
It's really amazing that Richie is in the NFL.
It is. It is. It truly is.
What was the funeral home incident?
Oh gosh!
Did he grab someone's dead body?
No, he had a meltdown. He wanted his I will frantically Google, but I believe is he wanted his father's head back or something
right.
like that. It was, I mean, that was a you know, there are guys who have anger management problems and guys who have various antisocial things that they do. That was bizarre and worrisome, and the fact that he's back out there, and I don't know. I don't know if this is good for him. I guess you can make the argument better he be in a building every day instead of you know, playing football, doing something that gives him some sort of structure than sort of out there in the world. But
yeah, I mean, I think it's a great idea when a guy has these kind of emotional issues and very few people in his life willing to check them, obviously, and you give that guy a couple million more dollars. Nothing can go wrong there.
It's can open his own funeral home, I suppose. Let's go Saints Bucks. Everyone's darling, the Tampa Bay Bucks, and we kind of kept on squinting and furrowing our brow and rubbing our chin and wondering, is this year's Bucks team for real? And I mean, look, you go to New Orleans, that's a tough place to play. And the Saints sort of got it going a little bit more on offense. Teddy Bridgewater, a little more aggressive going downfield in this game. And it ends up being a fairly easy Saints victory. As far as the Bucks go, I don't know if you can really take a whole lot away from this game. I mean, it still feels like a team that's probably like 7-9 ultimately this year. And unfortunately for them, they're in a very good division. But if you're a Saints fan, you certainly like what you saw from Teddy Bridgewater in this game as opposed to the first couple games, because you saw more of an aggressive, risk-taking type of offense, and you saw it pay off.
Yeah, well, just starting with the Bucks, I don't think you can. It's not acceptable for a receiver like Mike Evans to get completely taken out of the game. He gets 3 targets, no catches. And then for nobody else on the roster to really step up outside of Chris Godwin. And Godwin went for a couple touchdowns and 125 yards, but your offense has to be more versatile than that. And it doesn't seem like they have the options right now. And obviously that's something that Bruce Arians is going to try to fix in the draft and fix in free agency, you know, whether it's with Jameis Winston or without. On the other side, I feel like Teddy Bridgewater just made himself a lot of money, because quarterbacks have been handed the keys to franchises with lesser resumes. I mean, you think about the faith that San Francisco has instilled in Jimmy Garoppolo, and imagine just what teams will be willing to pay to get a Teddy Bridgewater on their roster. And if I'm the Vikings, I'm comparing this, you know, Mendoza line Kirk Cousins that we've known for 5 years to what Sean Payton has been able to do with Bridgewater, and I'm kicking myself.
I don't know. I think Bridgewater made himself money. I think he made himself, I think his services as a high-end backup will be in demand. I don't know. I don't know, Robert. It's 2019 NFL football is a game for the aggressor, and this is really the first game where you saw Bridgewater kind of be an aggressive quarterback, and really it just wasn't his MO going even back to Minnesota. He might be a guy, look, if you're out in Chicago, maybe this is a quarterback controversy. You bring in a guy like this who can just sort of keep your offense going on schedule a little bit better than the guy you have right now. But I don't know. I just don't think he ever gets that, you know, maybe he gets a Mike Glennon type deal, that sort of like fake 3-year deal where they can get out after year one if their young quarterback has risen up. But I think this is Teddy Bridgewater, and he'll have a fine career being what he is right now.
I think you're dead wrong.
Man.
I think a team like, you know, a team like Minnesota, if they're able to move on from Kirk Cousins, a team like Jacksonville, if Foles never works out, a team like Oakland, who may decide to move on from Derek Carr, San Francisco, who may eventually decide to move on from Jimmy. I think any one of those teams would give Teddy Bridgewater an opportunity and a real shot to start 16 games. And maybe it is a Mike Glennon type deal, but I think his leash is longer than Glennon's would be.
All right. Well, I used to quite frequently bet Andy. We'd bet each other a year's salary on various things. We'll bet a year of Teddy Bridgewater salary on this.
I'm not anywhere near as confident in my opinion as Andy.
One other thing, you mentioned Mike Evans basically shut out in this game, and this is the second straight week. Look, Marshawn Lattimore is putting together like his sizzle reel for his Defensive Player of the Year campaign here. I mean, Amari Cooper last week, and I mean, this is the rivalry here, Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore, and Lattimore once again just, I mean, a decisive victory in this one.
Yeah, there's going to be a fun story to be written 5 years down the road, like who has consistently won that matchup between Lattimore and Evans, because that, to me, that's the premier divisional cornerback wide receiver rivalry in the NFL right now.
Yeah, yeah, people got to pay attention to that one. Although it's usually Lattimore just winning decisively, but
But I think you can blame a lot of that on just Tampa Bay's offensive struggles.
You could, but you saw it last week. I mean, you take away a team's number one receiver, it just sort of throws stuff into chaos.
Yeah.
But let's you mentioned Kirk Cousins. Let's go. Let's get some good headlines here from Kirk Cousins here. The Vikings go out to East Rutherford with all this stuff going on. Does Stefon Diggs want out? Is Adam Thielen a little angry or very angry? Whatever it might be, but the Vikings get it going a little bit against the Giants defense that just their secondary is just not very good. But Cousins finished 22 for 27, 306, and two touchdowns, both to Thielen in a pretty comfortable 28-10 victory for the Vikings. But I guess this is kind of the question with Kirk Cousins, is the guy going back to Washington, he just runs so hot and so cold, and did what we see the first month, was this just Kirk Cousins running cold? And if so, I guess you would prefer he slumps in September as opposed to slumping in December and January. But encouraging with an asterisk in the win over the Giants today.
Well, to me, there's no news here. I mean, when he goes up against a good defense, he plays like crap. And when he goes up against a poor defense, he gives you hope. He's the Mendoza line of quarterbacks in my mind. He's perfectly reasonable to trot out there as a starter, but he's not going to take you to the playoffs. You have to have all these incredible pieces around him. You got to have a great defense. You got to have a great running game. You got to have two of the top 15 receivers in the NFL, which they have. And then maybe you'll go 9-7 in one of the tougher divisions in football. I don't understand why anybody expects anything more from Kirk Cousins. He's been this way ever since he got the starting job in Washington. Go up against a bottom 16 defense, he's great. Go up against a top 16 defense, he's trash.
He shows up every once in a while, though. I mean, he had a win in Seattle when he was in Washington, where it was basically Josh Doctson was his only receiver, and then he had a bunch of street free agents on the offensive line. You can see it. My issue with Cousins is just the variance, the week to week. You have no idea which guy is going to show up type of deal, and is it going to be the trash guy, or is it going to be the kind of okay guy, the kind of guy you would want if you're down 10 points going in the fourth quarter.
He's a less consistent version of Alex Smith, to where Alex Smith, if you averaged out all his performances, looks like Kirk Cousins on paper, but the difference is Alex wasn't going to go out there and just have a dud performance against a good team. He was going to look pretty good. And he was going to manage the game. Whereas, like you said, Kirk is way more up and down.
I gave you a disapproving
You don't agree?
I'd rather have Kirk than Alex. I like Kirk's ceiling. Now, I don't love Kirk because you've just seen him just be terrible recently, and frankly he was not very good last season, and it's gonna get to December and January and you're gonna say man, he better turn it up here. But I don't know if it'll happen.
Kirk has never had a season as good as Alex Smith's last season in Kansas City.
Yeah, but he's never had it, and no one's had a team outside of maybe Patrick Mahomes like Alex Smith had in Kansas City that last year.
That's,
I mean,
true.
That was also the first year they ran out a lot of that I don't want to say as if Andy Reid was not forward thinking, but sort of some of the new age offensive stuff they rolled out that year. When you had Tyreek Hill just running 20 yards behind every secondary, life is good.
At the same time, a lot of that stuff was what Alex ran at Utah, or evolution of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you just wonder, what if Alex had that opportunity? From the beginning of his career.
Yeah,
I'm an Alex Smith fan.
I like Alex Smith fine. I think he's a nice fella, and I think his career might have gone differently had he not started out in San Francisco, where things were pretty dysfunctional at that point. But let's talk about Daniel Jones real quick. He's a loser. Okay. Total loser. He's already lost a game now in the NFL. we all kind of saw this coming. This Vikings defense. Vikings obviously have their issues scoring points, but this Vikings defense is still very good. And, this was sort of a bit of a crashing back to earth type of thing for Daniel Jones. But, there was nothing particularly worrisome in this game. It's just, he's a fine young starting quarterback, and not quite at a point where he's going to carry your team to a victory in a game like this.
No, I think you're right. I'm really encouraged by him because it just looks like he has a lot of confidence. I didn't get to watch this game, but in the games that he's been in, there's no, there's no overbearing sense of urgency. He doesn't panic and try to make big plays that are outside of his ability. He just looks like a guy who's, taking life as it comes. And I think that's the way you have to be as a rookie quarterback on a bad team, on a team that still needs some pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I think his calmness will serve him well down the road.
He is weirdly calm back there.
I know.
It is nice. let's go Panthers Jaguars here. Kyle Allen goes to 4-0 as a starter at this point. A very Garoppoloian. I don't know what the modifier would be.
Garoppolian.
Garapolian.
Garapolian, oh, yeah.
There we go. There we go. We nailed it. Yeah, Kyle Allen, 4-0. I mean, and look, there's going to be a lot of conversation about, you know, when Cam is ready, when Cam is deemed ready. Do you still roll with Kyle Allen? And look, it's going to reach a point where you're going to kind of look at it, and if Kyle Allen's sitting there at 7-0 or something, it's like, can you go away from him at this point? But I do just want to reiterate, and he did take care of the ball this week. He had some turnover problems a week ago in Houston. But, I mean, this is kind of the Christian McCaffrey show at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, this, again, a non-quarterback can't win MVP in the NFL, because that's just silly the way the game is played. The quarterbacks are just monumentally more valuable than any other player can be. But if you're talking like non-quarterback MVPs right now, McCaffrey might be your front runner. I mean, he broke off another 84-yard run in this one. He's so valuable as a check down receiver in this offense. And I mean, that's how they're cooking right now.
Do they still give Offensive Player of the Year to a non-quarterback?
We do at the MMQB. And really, that's the only one that anyone pays attention to. But
yeah, I think his only competition at the moment is probably Dalvin Cook.
Yes.
Just because they're the most run-heavy offense in the NFL by a mile, and so these teams are going in knowing what they're going to try to do. Like, it's not complicated. They're going to run off tackle and off the guard with Dalvin Cook, and he's still getting over 100 yards a game and still dominating. So to me, he's in the running, but he doesn't have Christian's receiving ability, mm-hmm. and route running ability, and just Christian is a three down back who can affect the game six different ways, whereas Dalvin is just slightly more one dimensional. So I think you're right. You're spot on. I would give Offensive Player of the Year right now to Christian McCaffrey. With that said, I have been impressed with Kyle Allen, and I'm fascinated by his story. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy went undrafted in 2018 after getting benched at Houston and basically not playing his senior season. And I remember at the time, all of these people said, this is the dumbest possible thing that you could do in declaring for the draft, because he had another year of eligibility. But the man was sick of college football, sick of being an amateur, and he's delivering. And I think it's time to start having that conversation. Can Kyle Allen be more effective for us this season than a Cam Newton? And what can we get for Cam Newton in the 2019 offseason?
Yeah, it's like I said, it's when you start building something out of what they have going right now, because look, at some point Christian McCaffrey's not going to be the superhero one week, and you're going to need to come from behind, win a game, something like that. And I think that's when you'll see how much you can rely on Allen at this point. But we talked about it. I was on with Jonathan Jones last week doing the show. We were talking about his hometown Panthers and Kyle Allen, and the guy who replaced Kyle Allen at Houston, then it was De'Eriq King, eventually stepped in there. But it was a guy, Kyle Postma, was the guy who replaced Kyle Allen. And I've never heard that name outside of the 2017 Houston Cougars 7-5 season there. But yeah, that was he was a Kyle Allen was a highly recruited guy. He was at A&M. It was him and Kyler there at the same time, and this was supposed to be where he was going to end up, and he got there just not in the way we thought it would be.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it speaks to why these players should be able to transfer and have mobility in college, because, you know, if a guy like that can draw such bad situations to where he can't thrive in college but can start games for the Panthers and win a month's worth of games, then I think it just shows that there's a place for all of these kids in college football, and they ought to be able to go and find it, because these coaches have as much mobility as they want. They can recruit a kid, get them to sign up, and then go take a different job the next week. So why shouldn't the kids be able to have that same sort of freedom?
I'm with you. Don't yell at me. I'm with you 100% on that. Steelers-Ravens out in Pittsburgh. This was, you know, Steelers are still trying to figure out how they're going to do this offensively. And I guess sort of the moment everyone saw in this game was Mason Rudolph was knocked out. I mean, this was, you can ask Jeeves if you want to go see it for yourself here. But he was knocked out sort of on his feet by an Earl Thomas hit. And
do you actually use Ask Jeeves?
I wish it was still around. So
much, does it not exist anymore?
So much easier. And you know I've looked for it too. I have absolutely looked for it for various jokes and just haven't. It just doesn't exist anymore.
It was nasty. That was a rough one.
It was. And the question is, should Earl Thomas have been tossed there? Again, you know, I say the answer is yes on these sort of launching plays. I think that was clearly a guy launching helmet first into what was, if not technically, a defensive player, defenseless player, basically a defenseless player in that play. And even though I wouldn't call it a dirty hit, and Earl Thomas is certainly not a dirty player, I think the reckless plays have to be litigated out, and that's one way you litigate them out of the game.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think he could have been ejected, and very few people not in the state of Washington would argue. I'm sorry.
State of Maryland now.
State of Maryland, yeah. Would argue with you. I think he'll probably get fined for it. Now you're in a situation where the Steelers are going to a quarterback from Samford named Devlin Hodges.
Yep. I honestly, when Rudolph went down, I had no idea who the backup was for the Steelers.
Neither did I. And I looked this guy up. He went undrafted, and he was starting quarterback at Samford last year. He led the FCS in passing yards with 4,256. But he threw for 7.8 yards per attempt, 32nd in the FCS. So obviously, you can picture what kind of offense that is. It's an air raid where you're making a lot of short, easy throws. Even so, he was second in the FCS in interceptions with 16 behind Kalen Newton, Cam's younger brother, just to tie it up nicely.
Wow.
You
got a good research team out there.
I know. Here's my question for you, Gary. You got a good roster, okay? You've got a top 12, 13 defense, or what has the potential to be that. You've got a good running back. You've got a solid offensive line. You've got a top five wide receiver in the NFL. And so you've decided now, because we've known that Roethlisberger has been out for a few weeks, you've decided to leave the future of your season to Mason Rudolph and Devlin Hodges. Meanwhile, there's a quarterback in free agency who led a team to a Super Bowl, and given a few weeks of preparation, could very well be a starter in the NFL for your team. Why would you not sign that guy?
There isn't a reason you wouldn't sign him, or at the very least kick the tires on him, bring him in, and you gotta come up with something outside the box with his offense at this point, because what they're doing right now, and we saw it Monday night against the Bengals, all the Wildcat stuff, and it was neat, and they rolled it out, and it was like turning back the clock to 2008, and it worked for a night, and it just didn't really work in this one. They even, Jalen Samuels threw an interception deep in his own territory in this one. So you have a quarterback question. The person to whom you're referencing is certainly capable, last time we saw him, of outperforming Devlin Hodges, and not that Devlin Hodges was terrible in this game, but certainly he is a limited player at this point. And, you know, quite frankly, probably could have outperformed Mason Rudolph, even though Rudolph, you know, had the occasional big play that he sprinkled in against the Bengals. But I don't know what the Steelers are looking at for the season now.
We're at the point in the NFL where a team would rather throw away a season than have CNN parked outside their facility for a week.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, I mean, I think we were at that point in 2017, 2018. I mean, that's the way it's been.
So Good luck to Devlin Hodges, I guess. Well, just make sure you stand for the anthem, son.
We will see him next week. I presume, Devlin. Good luck to him. Let's go Broncos Chargers, and congratulations to Vic Fangio. Gets on the board, first win as a head coach for the Wunderkind out there in Denver. They're playing for him. I mean, not that I expect a team to pack it in after 4 weeks, but you know, they even without Bradley Chubb, they had a pass rush going in this game. Von Miller was dominant, and I know people look at the box score and say, well, they didn't sack Phillip Rivers at all, and they didn't. Rivers got rid of the ball, which is what he does. He's a savvy veteran quarterback, but they completely disrupted everything the Chargers were trying to do offensively.
Yeah, the problem with playing against Von or Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack, or, you know, maybe a couple years ago, J.J. Watt, is that you have to figure out where they are on every play as the quarterback, and you have to be so cognizant of what he's doing. Because you're right, like, he didn't really show up on the stat sheet, but if you watch that game, there were five or six times when he just completely disrupted a play by just sprinting around the edge and getting a hand on Phillip Rivers. And there were several key moments where he was able to do that. I really like the makeup of this Broncos team outside of the quarterback. I think once they do find that person who's gonna play that position for a long time here, and I live in Denver, I think that they could be special. I've been really encouraged by the slow and steady improvement of the offensive line. And Philip Lindsay had a huge day today, and they've got Royce Freeman as a really nice compliment. And it wasn't anything spectacular that those guys did. It was just consistently that offensive line opening up gaps against a good Chargers front four. So I was impressed by them, and you know, good for Vic Fangio, because you know, this was a guy who if the Broncos hadn't hired him, there was a chance that he was going to be a defensive coordinator for his entire time in the NFL. I mean, one of the oldest head coaching hires in recent memory, and this team has not given up on him, and I don't think they will this season.
No, I agree entirely. And I want to tie two things back to week two against the Bears. That was, I feel like teams see offensive lines early in the season and sort of overreact. I mean, we all overreact to everything that happens early
in
the season, but
for sure.
You see them get dominated by the Bears, and everyone starts wringing their hands and saying, oh, what a terrible group. And sometimes it's just, you know what? They played a historically great group on the other side, and they look bad, and that's life. And look, Vic Fangio could have been sitting at 2-3 right now, and in what is, I mean, everything's wide open in the AFC right now, had they not sort of had that game stolen from them. And I don't know. It's been, you know, I know it's tough to get excited about this Broncos team. It's sort of a, you know, it's a fairly conservative offense. It's Joe Flacco. It's tough to really get the crowd pumped on that one. But still a good team.
No, yeah, and I may have missed something, but because I was going back and forth with the Cowboys game and this game, but I don't think Garrett Bowles had a false start.
I was just saying, I'll pull up the play-by-play real quick.
That's a big deal around here, because I think he leads the league in false starts right now, and he led the league last year.
He didn't have a false start. He did have a tackle in this game, though.
Oh, okay.
There's a tipped interception. It was just a bad break, and Garrett Bowles cleaned it up.
Yeah, he's cleaning up his act. I think he'll ultimately be a good player. I mean, it takes tackles. Usually it takes tackles a while to come around in the NFL. I remember seeing David Bakhtiari's first few starts in Green Bay, a couple of them in person, and he was god-awful. Between the penalties, you know, holding, false start, and then just getting dominated by some of the better edge rushers in the game. And he slowly, steadily has become one of the top tackles in the NFL. So I think that's one of the positions where people don't have patience where they really ought to.
I was going to say, I think it's a speed and strength thing at what is the most physical position in the NFL. And I think it's also a little bit, just a little bit of you get a little more respect as your career goes on, once you've been out there for a while and you're not getting picked on by the officials like you might early in your career.
And I think you also figure out how to study individual pass rushers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's there's an art to that, because so many of these guys are so highly specialized and have several different moves in the toolbox for a young offensive tackle. I think it just takes a while to learn how to study those guys individually.
All right, Robert, it is time for the lightning-ish round. This is the fastest 3 hours in sports. Mm-hmm. We got five more games to go here. We are starting with Bills Titans, and a lot of people have asked us about Andy Benoit, who we both not only respect tremendously as a colleague and an analyst. He is, by a wide margin, the best analyst out there. But we love the guy. He's our friend, and we were sad to see what happened to him this week. I do want to assure people we are trying to get him back on board. I can't promise it will happen. We are taping this on Sunday night. I'm hoping he will be back for the Thursday show. I just can't guarantee it. But I do want to point out Bills Titans, 3 sacks for Jordan Phillips. Andy has been the biggest Jordan Phillips fan, and Jordan Phillips is breaking out as an absolute monster this season. And I just want to read a tweet from Andy from last October when Phillips was let go by Miami. Someone could get a really good quality starting defensive tackle in Jordan Phillips. Surprised the Dolphins let him go. Miami has a lot of defensive tackle depth, though. I mean, this has been one of his guys. He's got people pointing a laugh at him when he said Carson Wentz was going to be a week one starter as a rookie out of an FCS school, and plenty of other stuff. And he's not always right, but he's right more times than he's not right. And he is extremely right on Jordan Phillips, who is a monster in the Bills' victory over the Titans, as he has been all season.
Yeah, I was very upset and perplexed that the new management let Andy go. I tell people all the time, I don't know anybody more connected with coaches in the NFL. And Andy doesn't advertise that, and it's not his job to advertise that, because he's not a breaking news guy. He's a football analysis guy. And when I talk to assistant coaches, offensive coordinators, linebackers coaches, wide receivers coaches, over the course of doing my job, over the phone, in person, what have you, every second or third coach says, hey, how's Andy Benoit doing? Because Andy, at the beginning of his career, figured out how to get in contact with these coaches via email. He cold emailed all these people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And created these relationships from nothing, where he sits with them for an hour at the combine in Indianapolis, or an hour during Super Bowl week, or at the Senior Bowl or whatever, watching film. And then Andy writes based on that knowledge and those conversations. And he would never say in a column, hey, I was talking to Dirk Cutter and this is how he explained this to me, because a lot of the coaches he talks to value his discretion. And I think that if you polled NFL assistant coaches today on who the most informed person in terms of just football scheme is in NFL media, most of them would say Andy Benoit.
Absolutely. I'm hoping this absence will be extremely brief, but we'll keep everyone posted as best we can here. And obviously Andy's still doing his thing on Twitter. You can follow him there at Andy_Benoit. And certainly, I'm sure he'd appreciate any kind words that you might have for him at this point. Texans and Falcons.
This hasn't exactly been a lightning round.
Well, that's the way we do it here, because it's the lightning-ish round, Robert. We've got 2.5 hours to fill here. Texans, Falcons, I don't know about this Falcons team. We knew it was going to get worse with Keanu Neal out, but I was kind of looking at this game against the Texans, and everyone knows the Texans, even with the new parts they brought in the offensive line, still not great. This was the second time in Deshaun Watson's career he was not sacked in a game, and therefore he dropped 53 points on the Falcons, and I don't know. I'm rooting for Dan Quinn. I do think he's a good coach, but this is just going sideways for a second straight year.
My high school journalism teacher reminds me every week now that the Falcons stink every week, that I picked them to win the Super Bowl this year.
You shouldn't say that out loud, Robert. I think I did pick them for the playoffs and the preseason MMQB predictions here. But it's disappointing. And you just wonder if this window is slamming shut on the sort of Matt Ryan, Julio Jones core here. I guess Deion Jones is going to play forever, but it's disappointing. Nice win for the Texans, though.
It seems to me like a talented team on paper. And that defense has so much potential if healthy. But I think they do put a lot in that scheme, a lot on Keanu Neal's shoulders. And when you do mm-hmm. that and you lose a player like that, this is what happens.
592 yards of offense for the Texans, 5 touchdowns for Deshaun Watson, 426 yards passing. I mean, this was Will Fuller just kind of ran wild and free, did whatever he wanted in this one. 14 for 217 for him and 3 touchdowns. So we'll go out on the positive. Nice win for the Texans.
Very nice win. Yeah.
Cardinals, Bengals. Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, first NFL wins here. They go to Cincinnati against that Bengals offense that can't quite function with what they have for an offensive line right now. But, Cardinals get a little bit going early on. Kyler, I've liked that Kyler's been using his legs more and more often the last couple of weeks after he seemed sort of almost surprised by the speed of the NFL his first couple games.
Yeah, I would like to take a look at this one just to see Kyler Murray's first win in the NFL. Obviously, this wasn't on television. Didn't see it. Haven't seen highlights yet.
they weren't allowed to broadcast it. FCC rules shut it down.
I imagine it's very hard to tell if they're making real progress or if they just beat the one team in the NFL that's worse than them.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost disconcerting when they blew a lead against the Bengals. It was kind of like, oh, guys, what is going on? They were up 2 touchdowns and midway through the fourth quarter, and the Bengals came back on them. It took a Zane Gonzalez buzzer-beating field goal here to win it. But a win's a win. Like, a road win, it's not easy to beat anyone on the road. And obviously,
no.
It's a young team in progress. So good things. Nice things. We'll think nice things about this Cardinals team.
And Kyler continues to prove us wrong in some ways. I mean, SI wondered openly if he was really dedicated to football. And for the time being, it seems like it.
So far, it just kind of seems like he has found a comfort zone. You wonder if he was dropped into a situation like Washington, who we're going to talk about
right.
in a moment. Would that
right.
would that have had him... taking some batting practice on Mondays or something like that. But
we may never know.
Patriots go to Washington, and we all knew that the result was going to be lopsided, 33-7 final. Although Washington did lead in this game for a significant portion of the first quarter. They started with a little Steven Sims Jr. 65-yard touchdown run to go up 7-0. But, Colt McCoy, 27 pass attempts for 119 yards. This is what this roster is, and it's a really bad one. And quite frankly, I'm glad they didn't put Dwayne Haskins out there with it against this Patriots defense.
Yeah. I think about Josh Rosen, because one of the teams that was a finalist in the eyes of his agent in terms of trading for him was Washington. and so you just, it's like that guy can't catch a break. He would have been in a very similar situation to what he's in Miami, because this roster has next to nothing. And if you're Dwayne Haskins and his agent, you're praying that he does not get called upon here, because he can only look bad behind this offensive line with this group of skill position players.
The one other thing I'll say about the Patriots in this game is their offensive line struggled early on, which has been that's been a strength the last 2 years. It's been sort of a quieter, or as quiet as things get with this New England team, a quieter strength for this team. But I don't know if that's an issue come December. They become much more vulnerable than they've been in recent Januaries.
Yeah, you know, I think what you, if you're a Patriots fan, you're encouraged by these types of games where you can get the running attack going and you don't really have to tax Tom Brady. He doesn't have to take any hits. And then you're also not showing much of your offense and much of its potential passing-wise. They were able to run all over this Washington team, and they won't be able to do that all season long.
And finally, the Eagles, with their injury-plagued secondary, do manage to hold Luke Falk down and get their victory at home against the Jets. There were some boo birds out when they were up like 14-0 in this game early because they weren't up more against a Jets team that the defense looked completely worn out for stretches. And on top of that, like Luke Falk just can't. And look, he's a third-string quarterback for a reason, but he can't move this offense at all. They have no hope.
Yet another team willing to toss away its season rather than sign Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, that is totally fair. I mean, Sam Darnold coming back maybe next week. See how the spleen is, but the hole is too deep at this point.
Yeah, and they were a team that I think a lot of us thought, or at least some of us at the MMQB thought, could really challenge the Patriots this year.
Robert, it's just you and me, and do not tell anyone this, but I picked the Jets to make the playoffs in the preseason.
Did you really?
Predictions. I did. Yes,
Were we the only ones that had the Jets doing something this year?
Possibly. I really thought, I mean, look, things are obviously going to get better when Darnold's back in the lineup. Like I said, they're out here to an 0-4 start, and I don't know if they're going to come back from that, but I don't know. The defense, I'm not crazy about the coordinator, but there's talent there. And on top of that, I like Adam Gase. I know I'm the only person in the world saying that right now, but I like Adam Gase as an offensive mind, and I think with his quarterback, with his starting quarterback playing, I think they're going to be fine offensively.
Yeah, I think Gase is a great offensive mind. I don't know much about how he is at managing an organization and you know, leading a group of 53, but in terms of just offensive scheme, I think he's probably top five in the NFL.
All right, Robert, lightning round over.
Wow.
And that's it.
Well, this has been really nice, Gary, and you know, we don't chat enough.
We don't. We'll do like our own personal podcast from now on, and I'll record it, and then we'll each listen to it every morning just to sort of remind ourselves of our friendship here.
I'm kidding, folks. Gary and I talk literally every day.
It has been. Oh, no, I guess we talked this morning, didn't we? I was going to say, since that story, it's like, I don't know, we went like 3 days without talking.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm going to go see the Joker tonight.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What are your feelings going in, optimistic or pessimistic?
I think it's a little bit too soon to do a Joker movie after the best Joker rendition by Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
It was only like, what, 7 years ago?
Was it only 7 years ago? It feels like 10 years ago now.
Maybe it was 10.
Yeah.
Either way, there were like 20 years between DeVito's Joker and Ledger's Joker.
Wait, Jack Nicholson?
No.
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're thinking of...
I'm thinking of the Penguin. I'm thinking of the Penguin. Who did the Joker last before Ledger?
Jared Leto did it. That is Shelby chiming in with that.
I don't count that movie.
Doesn't count, Shelby. Sorry.
Anyway, I just think it's a little bit soon because Heath Ledger knocked it out of the park.
Yep.
But it feels like a very different movie. And I love Joaquin Phoenix and everything he's in, including the movie Her. And I'm excited about it.
I agree. I'm excited. I know people are bashing it, and I can't really decide if that makes me want to just sort of discard it and pretend it didn't happen. So
has it been panned by a lot of people?
Yeah, a lot of people are very critical of it. I think mixed reviews at best, but it seems like the snarky thing to make fun of right now. And I'm not popular enough to be different, so I will just go with the crowd.
One of the things I least trust is people's opinions about movies.
Okay. That's fair. I the last three movies were all like Pokemon movies with my kids, so I'm not sure what a good movie is anymore. But
you told me your kids have not yet seen Detective Pikachu.
No, they did see it, and it was the most confusing 90 minutes of their lives.
Did you guys go see it because I recommended it?
No, so we saw it. My wife showed it to him. Like, I was just at work one day, and you know, it was like a rainy summer day, so they just watched it on Netflix or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And my wife just said when it was done, when I got home that night, she's like, it was the biggest mistake of my life because the number of follow-up questions. And my wife and I missed the Pokemon wave, so we're learning with our kids sort of, but she doesn't have questions to a lot of or answers to a lot of these questions here, and she said she was just bombarded with questions for hours afterwards until she had to finally at some point scream just no more questions about that movie. I don't know.
You got to just direct them to the Wikipedia page in those situations and tell them to just decipher it for themselves.
Oh, God, I can't wait till they're old enough.
All right. Well.
All right. That is a wrap with our movie lightning round after that one. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Robert Klemko and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is always in our hearts, the executive editor of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.